Good morning. Shalom. Today's reading is going to be out of the book of Luke, 15th chapter, 11 through 32. Yeah, I know it's a long one. Just bear with me. It's the parable of the lost son. Jesus continued, "There was a man who had two sons. The younger one said to his father, 'Father, give me what my share of the estate is.' So he divided his property between them. Not long after that, the younger son got together all that he had and set off for a distant country and then squandered his wealth in wild living. After he had spent everything, there was a severe famine in the whole country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to a citizen of that country who sent him to the fields to feed pigs. He longed to fill his stomach with the pods that the pigs were eating, but no one gave him anything. When he came to his senses, he said, 'How many of my father's hired servants have food to spare? And here I am starving to death. I will set out and go back to my father and say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired servants.' So he got up and went to his father. But while he was still on a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. And he ran to his son, threw his arms around him, and kissed him. The son said to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son.' But the father said to the servants, 'Quick, bring the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Bring the fattened calf and kill it. Let's have a feast and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found.' So they began to celebrate. Meanwhile, the older son was in the field. When he came near the house, he heard the music and dancing. So he called one of the servants and asked him what was going on. 'Your brother has come,' he replied, 'and your father has killed the fattened calf, and because he has him back safe and sound.' The older brother became angry and refused to go in. So his father went out and pleaded with him. But he answered his father, 'Look, all these years I have been slaving for you and never disobeyed your orders, yet you never gave me even a young goat so I could celebrate with my friends. But this son of yours has squandered your property with prostitutes, come home, and you kill the fattened calf for him.' 'My son,' the father said, 'you were always with me, and everything I have is yours. But we had to celebrate and be glad, because your brother of yours was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found.'"
Thank you, Tim. "He was lost and is now found." You know, it's a very familiar passage that I think all of us have heard. The prodigal son story, or at least what we call the prodigal son story, is not to most of us, maybe any of us here in the room today. But it is very fascinating, and it is actually quite deep when we consider what it reveals to us about the very character and nature of God. Perhaps nowhere else in all the gospel story is the character and nature of God on display maybe as much as it is in this short parable. A man who had two sons. How many of us are parents? Any parents in the house? Okay. How many parents have more than one child? Most. Okay. How many of you are a child of somebody? Maybe not still a child. Yeah. How many of you had siblings? Yes. Okay. Most all of you. Okay. Okay. Any firstborns in the house? Do we have any number ones? All right. I love it. Look, I love the enthusiasm. Good. Okay. Good. Any babies of the family? Woohoo. Okay. Go for the babies. Okay. Anybody in the middle? All right. That's a pretty even split. Okay. Some of the middles. Where are you at in the middle? Are you like number two out of three, or are you like number seven out of 11? You know what? Tell me. Okay. So number two out of three? Three out of four. Kerwin? Three out of five. Third from the top out of eight. Depends on which way you're counting, I guess. Okay, yes. Okay, Bobby. You're 11 out of 13. Woohoo! You get the prize. Or actually, your mama should get the prize. Wow. Your grandma had 16. Yeah. What did... Oh, my gosh. Thank you. Elisa. 5 out of 6. Okay. There's a lot of talk about birth order. If you're a new parent today, I don't know what it was like back in my parents' day, but in my day, and now especially now, there's a lot of talk about personality traits that come through birth order. Maybe you've seen it. You know, Michael, you guys have got three just champs, man. Your boys are like the best, okay? But they're not the same, are they? And it's weird because they've got the same parents, they've got the same DNA, they've got all the stuff, the same household, and they're all boys, so they should be all the same, one would think, wouldn't you? Yeah, you would think that unless you had kids. And as soon as you have kids, you know that they are not coming out the same. They're just different. I was doing some reading this week about birth order, and, you know, they say that firstborns, where were my firstborns at? All right, good. Firstborns tend to be. Now, these are stereotypes, but they say they're actually truths, too. They're truths. Okay, firstborns. Now, okay, if you're not a firstborn, you can't be saying anything right now. Let me get this out. Okay. Firstborn children tend to be leaders. Okay? It says they tend to be more highly motivated, a little more conscientious, and achievement-oriented. That's not all. Of course, that's not all, but they tend to be that way. They say they've done a study of all across the world, CEOs of major companies, and you know a majority of the CEOs of major companies are firstborns. Interesting, huh? Middle children. So they tell me middle children tend to seek attention. For example, if the firstborn is that responsible overachiever, the secondborn or the third, whatever you are in the middle, are going to have to find their spotlight too. Secondborns, it's not surprising if a secondborn becomes a bit of a rebel, or at least is a little over-competitive because they've got to live up to those that have gone before them. They say that the babies of the family, whether it be third or 11th, or 13th, excuse me, they tend to be a little more relaxed. Relaxed. They say that because their parents have been there already, you know, they don't get quite as freaked out about every bump and bruise and B on the credit card. And so because the parents are a little more relaxed, it results that the kids come out a little bit more relaxed. So who are the babies here? Oh, you guys are all so chill. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I see that. Your husband says you're not so chill? Is that what you said, Val? Okay. Now, on the flip side, firstborns, not only are they often achievement-oriented, they also tend to be a little bit more anxious than their younger siblings. Not sure why that is. Actually, they tell me why, but I don't believe it all. But they say they are. Probably because, again, parents, firstborns, they're a little bit more anxious as parents. They've never done this before, so they don't know. They want to screw it up. And so they're a little more anxious. And maybe the firstborns, we pick that up. Middle children, it's not surprising. Not only do they seek that attention, but often they feel neglected. And you know what? Probably rightly so. It's probably rightly so. Because they're not the first, and they're not the baby. So somewhere in between. Okay, and the babies, again, not only are they relaxed, but the baby of the family tends to be more playful than the others. Youngest children, says, are playful, rule breakers, charming, and carefree. Are we hitting it so far? Oh, yeah, I see, you can see it, can't you? Yeah, so it's just funny how these personalities, and again, this isn't everyone. There's no one-size-fits-all when it comes to humanity, but there are some differences when it comes to this idea of birth order. And I think it's interesting, especially as we think about the story we just heard read for us today, that as Jesus tells this parable, again, one that we're very familiar with, he talks about a man who has two sons. And these two sons react and respond to their environment and to their father in radically different ways. Now, he wasn't trying to do a lesson on birth order for parents who are coming along. He was trying to illuminate for a people who are having a hard time seeing what God was about, what God's heart is really like. And so he tells this story. Because remember, at the beginning of chapter 15, it says that he was being confronted. There was a group of religious leaders who were upset at him because all of these sinners were flocking to him. And worse than that, he was hanging out with them. They thought that was just inappropriate and absolutely wrong. So it says he told them this story. He actually told them three stories, as we mentioned last week or 2 weeks ago. He talked about the lost sheep, the lost coin, and today we're going to look at the third of these, which is the lost sons. And so this is his response to those who did not understand what the heart of God was really all about. Now the story goes, as you heard it, and again it's familiar, I don't need to tell it all over again, we've heard Tim, you'd read it well, thank you Tim. But also for all of us, we've heard this story before, but oftentimes we miss out. We miss out on part of what the story is trying to tell us because it has become so familiar to us. Part of it is that all of us seem to relate, don't we, to that youngest son, that one who somehow wandered and yet somehow was accepted, even though they didn't feel they were acceptable. And yet they are. Most of us don't relate. In fact, I almost didn't have you read the second half of the story, which is where the story turns and looks at the older brother. We'll focus on that part next week. I'm just going to say this week we're going to look at this relationship between the younger son, because both sons have a relationship with their father that is broken. And the heart of the parable, which reveals the heart of God, is that the most important thing to God is that that relationship that is broken gets mended. That's good news for us. That we need to know that as we think about God and all the things that happen in life, sometimes we color our perspective of God and with all kinds of other stuff, but we need to remember, as Jesus said, that there is nothing more important than his children to this Father. And there's nothing more important than mending the broken relationship that any of his children may have with him. And so we see it played out here in these parables. The first son, I guess we said, the youngest son, the baby of the family most likely, he looks like he's a baby of the family. But what we need to look at here is, again, what would have been surprising to those who are hearing this parable for the first time? Again, that's hard for us to imagine that hearing this parable for the first time, because most of us have heard it all our lives. But imagine if you were a first century Jew, and especially a religious authority in this day that Jesus is speaking to, there's going to be parts of the story that are going to be very jarring, maybe even offensive to them. Here we go. There was a man who had two sons. No surprises so far. But the first two surprises come in the very next breath. The younger one said to his father, "Give me my share of the estate. I want what's coming to me. I want the stuff that is mine. I want your stuff, Dad, but I really don't want you." This would have been a shock to anyone living in a patriarchal society like first century Israel. This would have been incredibly inappropriate to the point where no one had probably ever heard a son say this to their dad. To us, that's not shocking. Sons do all kinds of stupid things in our culture, don't we? I can say that because I'm a son. And I've done a stupid thing or two in my life. But in this culture, this would have been a shock. Probably people listening to the story saying, "Wait a minute, what did he say? The son said, 'Give me my stuff now?' You don't do that. Is that even possible? But the second surprise that would have caught everyone's attention is the one that follows right after, because not only does the son go completely inappropriate, but the father goes along with it. Here he says, "So he divided his property between them." This is the beginning. Everyone's saying, what in the world is going to happen next? This is part of what makes the story, I think, so fascinating, that somehow the father is going to suspend his rights. And again, understand, Jesus is revealing to us the heart of God right here. He's going to suspend his rights, in a sense, suspending his sovereignty, how the child, the son, the rebellious one, to be able to express his will. This is a beautiful example of what it comes down to, this idea of each of us as human beings being given this thing called free will. We don't understand it, and sometimes we struggle with it. We struggle with how does God's sovereignty, if he is sovereign, how does that fit with us making our own choices and being responsible for our own actions? How does that all fit together? And here he says, this is just simply it. The Father allows it because that's part of the heart of the Father. It comes out of a heart of love that free will is given, even though that free will may take us to places that do not do the Father's heart very good. Because that free will comes with responsibility, and choices do come with consequence. So we see this is how it begins, and we begin to understand. Now, no one would have been surprised if they are already offended by this youngest brother, and they're already offended he asked for this. No one's surprised that he's going to go and blow his money in a faraway place. Certainly, he can't do it there at home because the community would have excommunicated him. Certainly, he's got to go somewhere else, and there he can blow it, and of course he would because he's irresponsible. No one would ask for it, and if they do ask for it, obviously they're going to blow it. So this next part that we tend to like so much, we'd like to pay all of our attention on, it would have been just noise, white noise to them. Of course he's going to blow his dad's money. Of course he's going to wind up in a bad place. That's what happens to irresponsible people. We know that. Until the point where he says, what am I doing? And this is the crux of it. That though he moves to faraway land, there is no place from which he cannot return. This is an important piece that Jesus is telling in the midst of the story, because so many people feel that they have done something so bad that they can't be forgiven for, or they've gone so far that they can't come back from, that they've taken that step, and so why not just keep going, because what's the point? I can't ever get it back. And in some aspects, consequences come, opportunity of getting it all back. But when it comes to the mercy and the grace of God, we do not cross a line that is too far. So he makes up a plan. Did you hear the plan? I'm going to go home. I'm going to tell him I screwed up. I'm going to tell him that I'm no longer being called his son. I'm not even going to ask to have my place in the home again. I'm simply going to ask for a place so I don't starve to death. I'm going to plead for mercy, because that's what mercy is. Mercy is the act of withholding punishment that is justified. That's mercy. And so he's going to go back and he's going to ask for mercy. Don't punish me, Dad, for what I have done, but just allow me back. But grace, and this is something different, grace is the act of giving or extending favor that is not deserved. Quite different than just mercy. I found this week on Facebook, of all places. How about that? Just in time for the message today. And it said this. It says that grace is when God gives us good things that we don't deserve. That's important to keep those two separate. But mercy is when he spares us from bad things that we do deserve. Blessings are when he is generous with both. Truly, we can never run out of reasons to thank him, because God is good all the time. Okay? And that becomes the heart even of this story. It is coming out of this story that we have all of these phrases that we come to know. All the songs we've sung today, all those things about how there's nothing that we can do that will ever take us away from his love for us, all rooted in the story that Jesus reveals to us. But there's a third surprise. There's a third surprise, and this is probably the biggest surprise. I'm going to try to wrap this up here, promising that we're going to go even deeper and going into the second half of the parable next week. But the third surprise is the big one. It's not that someone would realize that what he has done has been a mess of his life. We can often realize we've made mess out of things. When he's hungry and has no way of feeding himself, he says, "Boy, I sure screwed up. I will ask for mercy." But the great surprise of the story is here. And again, for you and for me, this is part of the story. It's no big deal. But for the original hearers, this would have been shocking. It says, but. And when it says, but, it's like Jesus is saying, I know what you expect, but this is going a different direction. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him. Compassion for him, he ran to his son and threw his arms around him and kissed him. Friends, that is such to us almost a throwaway line, but this would have been the mic drop moment for anyone hearing it for the first time. This wouldn't be what happened. This doesn't happen in our natural human world. He is revealing something divine here, that the very heart and nature of God is not one of waiting for you to come back and plead to not be punished, but the heart of God runs out, sees from a distance, runs out there with compassion, throws his arms around, embracing the son and giving him a kiss. This is the very heart of God for each of us, friends, when we take that step back. When we dabble with whatever it is that we dabble with, that sometimes makes us feel like we are no longer really in close, or we're not doing it right, when we feel like we've screwed up and we don't know how to turn back to God. We don't want to go back to him because we're afraid he's going to be angry with us, or he's going to punish us, or he's going to do something that we really deserve, but we don't want it. That we tend to avoid, keep God at distance because we're afraid of stepping back in. And this is the image of God that Jesus gives to us. Friends, this is it right here. He saw him and was filled with compassion, ran to his son and threw his arms around him. This is the aha moment. This is the no way. It doesn't work like that. And Jesus says, yeah, it is. This is amazing grace, because it doesn't fit in our concept of how things ought to be. This is a God who loves you beyond measure and invites you to himself, not because of how worthy you are, but because of how much he loves you and he wants you to know it. There's a second but here. Son goes into his little line about what he's going to do to try to make it up and how he's going to just grovel before the father. But the father says, but the father said to his servants, quick, bring out the best robe and put it on him. Oh, man. Put the ring on his finger, sandals on his feet, kill the fatted calf. Let's have a feast and celebrate. You know, this is, again, this story is there for a purpose. It is to remind us that no matter where we've been, we are invited to come back. And it's not so that we can try to do penance. It's not so that we can take our punishment. It is so that we can be restored into that child of God relationship yet again. And so this is the beginning. This is the jumping off place. I'm telling you, please come back next week, because we really need to, because the point of the story is not the younger brother. The point of the story is the older brother. And I want to deal with that next week, but there's so much in this younger brother that is so important for us to understand our walk with Jesus, that is critical for us. That as we move into even today into this time of celebrating communion together, that's what we're talking about. We, like the younger brother, can turn and come. And here at the table, we are then embraced, that we are kissed by God, that we are told that we are yet his children and he loves us. And we celebrate that by taking the bread and the juice and being reminded of how much he loves us. And so we'll do that today in just a moment, but I just want to hold on to that. And all of us today, no matter where we're coming from, no matter what we have done, we come today to ask that forgiveness, but even more, to receive that forgiveness and that embrace from God. So, Father, I thank you for this word today. I thank you for the reminder of how great for us is your love. Help us to come and meet you here. To receive that fresh embrace that only you can give us. Father, we thank you for these acts of communion that we're about to receive today. Meet with us through it in Jesus' name. Amen.